A quick note before we start. About 70% of all people who listen to the show on Apple or Spotify don't follow the podcast. If you like the show, please hit that follow button. It ensures that you don't miss an episode, and it really helps spread awareness of the conversations we're having. And if you can leave a comment or a rating, that's even better. Thank you. Okay, let's get back to the show.
I'm Andrew Kitley, and this is my podcast, The Invisible Gift, a show about turning disability into possibility. From a young age, I was told I had a disability that would make it impossible for me to achieve and flourish in life. I struggled in school and felt I was not truly understood or supported. On my long road to becoming the owner of multiple businesses, I have learned that dyslexia was not my disability, but rather my invisible gift. My dyslexia challenged me every day, but it was also what made me into an independent thinker, a creative, and gave me that hard-working mindset that has taught me to never be discouraged by failure. I realised there are many people out there just like me. So I wanted to learn more about them and how we can all transform our greatest challenge into our invisible gift. Welcome to my podcast.
So we're back in the podcast studio, but for some reason the lights aren't working, so we're kind of sitting in the dark.
I quite like it, James. I think it's a bit more intimate, and I've got all these lovely coloured lights up here.
You have. He's talking about the control panel for the audio equipment.
Yeah, it's cool.
What's been going on in your world? What do we need to know?
I've been going down the gym every day in anticipation of meeting Kane.
Oh, preparation in case he brings you all these sweets.
So, yeah.
Well, just before we get onto that, let's just do a quick recap on last week. You met with Chris Quickfull from Cognosist.
We did indeed.
He shared his story about how he started his business that has created a test to find out whether you're neurodiverse, and if so, give you some feeling as to what it might be, what it might look like, and next steps.
Yeah, which is going to be very good for a lot of people out there. Unfortunately, the biggest part of neurodiversity is discovering you have it in the first place. But once you do, it really, really opens some doors for you.
And he's doing some great stuff around connecting with employers and making things more accessible. And his biggest point and the biggest takeaway for me was, this is not a new thing. Like, get with the program, because if you're an employer and you aren't aware of your neurodiverse employees, then now is the time to do that. And it's not a cutting edge new thing. You should already be doing it.
Yeah, you should already be completely in.
This week, you sat down with Kane.
Yes.
And he brought you some sweets, I understand.
He brought me some sweets, a man after my own heart.
How were they?
They were amazing. Although, given a person with ADHD, sugar is probably not the best idea.
So Kane is an entrepreneur and founder of the gift and confectionery company Ask Mummy and Daddy. He began his career working with fellow dyslexic entrepreneur Kath Kidston before making his way up through that company and eventually leaving to start his own business.
Yeah, what an inspiration to work with before starting your own business. Probably one of the, outside of Richard Branson, probably one of the most famous dyslexics in the UK.
I didn't actually know she, I know who she is, but I didn't know she was dyslexic.
No, she's very vocal on dyslexic people. And in fact, she's been employing dyslexic people for most of her career.
We should try and get her on the pod.
Yeah, we should.
So in the episode, apart from eating sweets, you talked about how Kane got his first job from Kath herself, how you discussed, and I think Connor might be winding me up here, but he's put candidly, which I think might be a joke on candy.
Well done, Connor. Yeah.
On how you guys both got in and out of debt. And you talk about how you know when a business has outgrown its founder.
Yeah, this was a really powerful chat for me, because I feel quite alone when I have this conversation about, again, this is self-awareness, known to a point when you can take your business up to before you bow out for someone to take it to better levels and, you know, take it to the where you envisage it to go, but without you.
Anyway, enough from us.
Yep.
You, as always, started by asking Kane a little bit more about himself.
Do you want to introduce yourself for us?
Yes, I'm Kane Dow. I'm the founder of Ask Mummy and Daddy, which I have had for 3.5 years now. And it literally is a business that I started as a hobby. I left school at the age of 15 and I had no GCSEs. Academically, I wasn't very good. I suffer from dyslexia and I just really wasn't interested in furthering my education through uni and college and stuff like that. I was always at school. Trust me, my mum wouldn't be letting me have a day off for anything. And I was a bit like, do you know what? I would rather learn from inspirational people, starting from the bottom, which is obviously what I did. So my parents were involved in the antiques industry. Mm-hmm. And my mum was like, don't think you're sitting at home, you've got to apply for jobs. But in the meantime, you can come and work with me in my shop that they had in Fulham. And they used to just sell furniture. And when I was there, a lady called Kath Kidston come in. Kath Kidston, the owner of the brand Kath Kidston. And I don't know what happened, but and obviously she knew my parents and stuff, so that helped. But she only had one shop at the time. And I remember her saying, she come in looking for furniture for another shop that she was opening. And I thought, you know what, this is my moment. I have no interest in floral prints or just, I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to ask her for a job. So I asked her just for a job. And I think she did actually tell me, and we still speak now, but she was like, I admire you for actually just asking. You know, if you don't ask, you don't get. It's my sort of mentality, and it always has been, it always will be. So I literally just asked her for a job. And I remember her saying, take, you know, give me your number, blah, blah, blah. So fast forward a couple of months, and I remember I literally joined Kath Kidston at the age of 16 years old. And I was as nervous as hell, I suppose, walking into an office where it was just 9 women. At the age of 16, I was a bit like, oh my God, like this is just a bit too much, you know, it's like ridiculously shy. And I was there for 10 years. So, wow. And it was amazing. And I mean, I got to go from 1 minute doing window displays to flying to New York to open a store there, to then going to LA, to then going to Hong Kong. It was like the most incredible experience ever. And I made a lot of mistakes, but I also, you know, learned from them mistakes. And, you know, mistake in terms of what are those mistakes, it's just like, you know, general stuff, like forgetting to do certain things when I was supposed to, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe coming in really late one day, you know, just general stuff. But remember, I was, you know, 16 years old. I've never had any work experience before. And it was incredible. I suppose fast forward like 10 years from working in a marketing department to facilities to visual merchandising, like operations. It was incredible to see a brand go from one shop to when I left and there was 120 worldwide. Wow. And that was incredible to see. But, you know, as business grows, which is kind of what I want to do with my business, it grows and grows and grows. And obviously Kath Kidston was becoming less. I love it. People always go, you call her Kath. It's like she was just becoming less and less involved in the actual business, and obviously all other people that I grew really close to, because they sold out. And I was like, you know what, been here for 10 years, I'm now mid-20s, I'm kind of ready to kind of go off and do my thing. But I think I knew I wanted to stay in retail, but I thought, you know what, have a break. So I had some savings, and I literally done a bit of traveling for 6 months to a year, and then I come back and then kind of looked for my next adventure, which was to go into another business called Biscuiteers, which is a premium gifting business. And being there was sort of where I had my light bulb moment for Ask Mummy and Daddy, because I saw what they were doing with biscuits, literally selling premium box of biscuits for £45. It was just ridiculous. And I'll be honest with you, and I even told the owners this, who again, I still speak to now, but I was like, these biscuits are not very good. But it was the work that they were doing on me, in terms of they were exactly saying what it says on the tin, which was they are handmade, they are hand iced, and the work that goes into them was incredible.
Yeah.
So I admired it hugely. And they were in a very premium area. And I literally was like, you know what? I want to do something in food that is a long shelf life. Because I thought, you know, I can't go into like the sort of dairy industry with milk and stuff like that. It's just not going to work. I was like, I want to go into something. And I was like, sweets. It's got to be sweets. One, shelf life's like 18 months. But also, I find that the confectionery industry at the moment is not where I believe we can take our business. And I knew obviously that was going to be, you know, lots of hard work. So I literally was like, do you know what? I'm going to do it. But I did it whilst I was working at Biscuitiers. So I was doing it as a sideline, just on like weekends, doing market stalls and all sorts. But it was when I was at Biscuitiers, I stupidly got myself in a load of debt where I don't know how it happened. I'll be honest. My dad even says to this day, he's like, you're living your life like a rock star. You don't have rock star wages. So I don't know how you're doing it.
And we call it champagne taste beer budget.
yeah, that's a good way of putting it. But I literally put myself in like £20,000 worth of debt. And that was from silly things like credit cards, you know, finances. And back then, you know, they were just giving you money away. And I literally was just like, this is amazing. But actually not thinking about, oh my God, I'm getting paid at the end of the month and my wages don't even cover my debt collection people, plus my rent, plus my living expenses. And I literally just effectively had a bit of a breakdown and it severely affected my sort of like mental side, because I was waking up during the night at like 3 o'clock in the morning, deep sweats, couldn't sleep. Like I was like, oh my God, the bailiffs are going to knock on the door. It was literally just getting too much for me. But it just shows you, I'm not a parent myself, but it just shows you parents know best. My dad and mum just knew there was something up. So I remember there was like loads of letters coming through. And bear in mind, my parents own a business, you know, they're used to letters coming through the door and stuff. And all for the good reasons, obviously. But it was, my dad was like, no, something's going on. So he literally just opened one of the letters, big red stamp on there. And it literally was like, you need to pay this, you need to pay that. And obviously my parents just sat me down and I was like, oh my God.
Slapped
me and was like, what was going on? And I literally just had a breakdown and I was like, wow.
I think I had say almost identical. I used to be a scaffolder. And I was on, I think it was 65 grand a year. And by the way, scaffolders earn more than that now, shockingly. actually, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for that, but I'm not. And I left and went into office as a graduate engineer. And I was going back to uni one day a week at the time. And I went from 65 grand a year to 21,000 a year. And at the time, I'd just moved out with my girlfriend, now my wife. And we got ourselves in, I think, at our worst stage was at £67,000 worth of debt.
Wow.
Now, we still had that last year, right? And we've been together 15 years now because we just kept on trying. We have multiple businesses. We kept investing. And I kept on putting off everything to do with debt in order to build the businesses. And actually, last year, we paid off with that and plus my business now nearly £250,000 worth of debt. So for the first time ever, we're debt free.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, it feels like an accomplishment.
Yeah.
But I've done exactly the same. If someone said, well, my parents, I once told my mum about it. I thought she was going to kill me because she has spent her whole life going, do not get into debt. And they've not put money aside. And I remember I told my mum once and she was like, what have you spent that money on? I was like,
yeah, it was the same.
I have no idea. Absolutely. If I sat down and tried to go through it, I would not know where my money went. But what's really funny is if I hadn't been through that, I wouldn't be like I am with money now. And I think I'd be even worse.
Yeah. No, I agree. I remember my dad sitting down going, how have you spent 20 grand? I still to this day will say, I think I definitely brought a laptop and I went to New York and my dad was like, right, a laptop's a grand, New York, 2 grand. What are you doing with the other 17? And I was like, I don't know, Dad, you know. And then that's where he dropped, you're living your life like a rock star and you ain't a rock star. And I think it's because my parents were being, you know, they've been brought up in a different way, in the sense of, you know, my parents wouldn't go out and buy something if they physically did not have that money in their bank. You know,
different era, though, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
But you're right, it's the money they were giving you at the time. I just always said, at one point when I had no money, the amount of money I was getting offered was insane. It was like, here's a credit card. I remember I got a credit card. One of my first credit cards, they gave me like a £750 limit. And then within 3 years, it was £16,000 limit on it. And I was like, why are you giving that to me? Yeah. I don't want that. Well, but I'll take it. yeah. So, oh,
no, it was a really hard time to like get to grips with that. Mm. And I think that is the part that made me go with Ask Mummy and Daddy. Do you know what? And not at the time, like I said, it wasn't even a brand then. It wasn't even a business. It was more just as a hobby. But I was like, I cannot leave my job in because one, I'm going to have to go and start this business. One, how am I going to afford it? You know, it's, you know, you've got all those things. And I was thinking in the back of my head was like, I can't, I just have to be very careful with what I do next in the sense of, I know what I've got here. I know where I can build it to, but I don't want to be getting myself back to square one again, which is a load of debt.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I was, you know, very cautious, I suppose.
You said that you asked Kath for a job when she came in, and then you said obviously that you've started another business on the side while working for another company. All of that says to me, as a fellow dyslexic, you must have had some pretty strong confidence, because I speak to people about dyslexia all the time, and they're like, oh, I say, why don't you just do this? Oof, I wouldn't do that. But because of the confidence, do you think your confidence come from your parents, your friends at school? Where do you think you got that confidence to go, do you know what? I'm going to approach, because let's face it, she's a celebrity. Mm. Like, she's, everyone knows who she is. Mm. What gave you that confidence to go, do you know what? I'm going to go for it.
Do you know what? Without blowing my own trumpet, I would say I am. I would say I am. There used to be a running joke, like when I was at Kath Kidston, because in the department I was in, like, let's say marketing at one point, we'd be trying to get something signed off and they'd be like, Kane, go on, you just go and speak to Kath, because obviously, like, she prefers you, or she admires how you just are quite forward and quite up front. And but always respectful. I'd always be respectful. You know, I've been brought up with manners, with a good upbringing, but it was just like, you know what? If you don't ask, you don't get. And I did have that fire in my belly of like, I want to do what I want to do, but I would happily take advice as well. You know, sometimes I'd be saying stuff that's probably not always the correct thing to say, but I think the people I worked with would admire me just coming forward and talking about it, because like I said, I wasn't arrogant. I wasn't rude, and I was literally just like, guys, I've got a question, or I want to do this. What do you reckon? I remember once I had a moment where I was, when I was at Kath Kidston, I was getting, it's like 6 years in, I was getting really, really bored. So I remember I was sitting at home one night and I just typed up an email where I had this plan of basically, I was like, look, Kath Kidston, they're growing the brand, but actually not really growing the brand outside London. Mm. At the time, I think they had like one store in Brighton, one in Bath and one in Bristol, but I was like, this haven't touched anywhere else. Mm. But obviously, you know, we can't just run out and start opening shops straight away. It don't work like that. So I literally was like, you know what? I got this idea of basically getting a vehicle, stripping the whole thing out of the vehicle and turning it into a shop on wheels. Mm. So I literally wrote all this down and I called it Kath Kidston on Tour. And I remember sending this email to, it was Kath Kidston, it was two of the other two MDs, like, you know, the top people. And I remember on Monday morning, it was such a good feel-good factor. I remember on Monday morning, I was at my desk and I saw them walking towards me. And I was like, you know, even though I'm comfortable enough, I was like, shit, they're going to be like, hey, what idea? Do you know how much it's going to cost us? Blah, blah. And it did cost a lot, but they were like, great idea. So literally I was taken away from the department I was in and going, right, you focus on this. So it was literally incredible. It was about a 9-month lead time into everything. So that was from going out. I don't even drive, by the way. So I don't know why I was going to look at vehicles, but I was with someone else. So I ended up going to, I think it was Plymouth or somewhere, literally to look at old library buses. And I was like, I remember we bought one for like $6,000. Literally, then it went to a construction company. They stripped the whole thing out. We designed the whole of the inside of the store. Then I had to pinpoint all of the events we needed to go to. What was the max audience going to be? Then it was hiring all the staff. So, and we were actually solidly on the road for 6 months. I think I come back 1 week in those 6 months. It was awful weather as well. But you know, it was the most amazing thing to ever do. I think we got like 250,000 people on the mailing list, which was more important than the money, to be fair. It was literally incredible. It was hiring staff, where I came up with this idea with personality. I was literally like, right, all the staff that are working within the Cath Kidston stores, they're going to want this job. So we needed to hire people that knew the brand. And I remember sending it all out and I was like, you have to send in a YouTube video. This is years ago as well. And I was like, you have to sell yourself. So it was more, and then send a video in, like 10 minute, 5 minute video. It didn't really matter. But it was more so we could see all the personalities. And I literally sat there for like 2 days with the HR department and we literally went through every video, which was incredible. It was hilarious as well. But it was just brilliant at seeing everyone's personality and be like, right, they're the right fit. And then we fired ahead with it and literally it was the most incredible thing, going from like festivals to agricultural shows to stopping up outside universities. It was like just the most, but logistical, it was the most, one of the hardest jobs to try and get stock from your warehouse in Peterborough to like all different parts of the country. Like it was just incredible, but it was one of the most amazing things we've ever done.
So it must've been quite amazing to have someone support you in your ideas, because I would have loved that. I've always had loads of ideas and sometimes I sit there in such frustration that people aren't doing or they don't see them. And I've always sat in the background and not told them I'm not worried about what they think, but I just knew that it wouldn't be sanguine because the way they process information isn't the same way as I do. It must have been great to have someone that believed in that, but I suppose because she was dyslexic as well, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. And, she was dyslexic. She was ridiculously, she was ridiculously creative. And I think where I bounced off her, even though obviously she was much older than me, she couldn't have children. And she lost her parents both really young. She also was an alcoholic. So she found kind of like someone who she could sort of take under their wing a bit. And obviously, look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I knew, because obviously she knew my family and stuff. It just made it, it was a much, much smaller business then. So you were able to do all of that sort of stuff. Whereas this day and age, you know, you've got to be quite careful in workplaces with favoritism or whatever it will be. But it was, I think she got it and she understood that. I always get told now, even from my own team in the office, I know I speak too fast. Two, I will be talking to Jess in the office, but at the same time I'm talking to Jess, I'll be talking to Daisy. It's just a thing I do. But then I would hope, and I always tell them, ask the question if I haven't explained it properly, but I'm like bouncing off two or three or four people at the same time. Whereas actually sometimes I need to take a breath, just relax and then gather your thoughts, I suppose.
That's exactly what I'm like. My team gets so frustrated with me because I'll be answering a couple of questions whilst answering one of the other questions on Teams. Like when I speak to my senior members, we have to message each other on Teams because our office, everyone can hear everything as we go in the meeting room, and I don't want to make it look too official by taking in the meeting room. So we'd be messaging each other on Teams and I'll be talking to them at the same time and everyone's like, are you listening to me? Yeah, I am. And you just keep on, but I've found I need a break from it. So my office is on Tower Bridge, overlooks Tower Bridge. And I now take walks along the water to calm my brain down. And it actually really helps.
Well, do you know what? It's funny you say that when I was talking about our nightmares with our production guys at the moment, which I can go into much later down the line, but I literally sometimes we've got a park right opposite our office. And sometimes just before Christmas, I was just having an absolute nightmare with them, the guy that runs it. I was like, I need to get out of this office. Left my phone on my desk and literally went over to the park and literally done four, walks around, laps, And I did feel so much better for it when I come back. I was like, right, let's start again. It's like the whole email thing. I will be like, I've got my to-do list, writing it all down. I always start off as I mean to go on. Sometimes it don't work that way. So I'm writing one, two, three, bullet points. And when I get them highlighted, I'm like, job done. But then sometimes I'll literally just go on to, I'll be say Christian in the office might go, Kane, can you just look at that for me? So I'll be like, yeah, I'll do it. So I'm looking at it. But then I might see another email block come up and I'm like, right, Christian can wait. I'm going on to that. But I know that doesn't help. So it's what I'm trying to do is become more transparent and more, engaging with the team that I have or with people that I work with, in the sense of I will get around to it. I haven't forgotten. Don't think I have, because I will get, you know, I'll get there. So I'm trying to work on certain things myself that I know I need to probably, look, we're not all perfect.
Do you say yes to most things?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. So you've basically summed up my day. So obviously structural engineers, I'm the senior engineer. I have to check a lot of work. Other people can, but when my most senior engineers do work, it needs someone at the same level to check it. So they always send me a message, Andrew, can you check this? It's got to go out today. Yeah, no problem. I will get up on the screen. I will start looking for the drawings and the calculations. And then someone will email me and then I will completely forget about that. And then all I know is I then get a message or someone says to me, Andrew, I need to send that in the next half an hour. I can't, I'm in a meeting. So then Someone else has to check it. And I'm trying to get in the process now of stop saying yes to everything. So I've actually just hired a new person to pretty much take over the company. Man. So I'm going to get someone that sits there and does all the technical stuff in the business. And I see what's happening in 2 to 3 years. I always say to people when I talk about a business, I have a 5-year plan and I know what's happening. And when I'm doing stuff now, a lot of people go, what do you do? I don't know if you've had that yet,
but
my team are like, there's two things. It's like, how do you fit it all in? Which I get asked all the time because I told them I was coming here today and they're like, right, you do a podcast, you run other businesses, you run this business. You're also in the process of becoming a governor of a school. You do all this other stuff. Like, when, how do you fit it in all? And in the other breath, they're like, what do you actually do? And then what's funny is I've started telling them what I'm doing and I tell them in meetings. Because when it gets to a year's time and it happens, they're like, holy shit. How did you plan for that? And I was like, well, if I don't do it now, when we get there, it's going to be too late.
No, it's true. So true. Like, and I think that's why it's, you know, like I remember one of the girls in the office, Yasmin, she went to me, yeah, Kane, you know your holidays you've got coming up. I think you need to probably like put them in the diary just so people know, like when you're away, because it is, I like to give as much attention to like, the team that I have. And the only way of doing that is by actually structuring sort of certain days, you know, so like at the moment I've got them, you know, cause sometimes you can just end up having meetings for the sake of having meetings. And it's sometimes just draining.
Do you know, I changed that. Best thing I ever done. Any meeting has to be done, stood up. It finishes meetings.
Someone's actually told me that before.
Do you know what? They are the best thing ever. You give a rule. I brought in a rule about, maximum 20 minutes. That's a bullshit rule. People don't listen to that. They will stay in there for hours if they need to. Right. And then I was like, right, what do people respond to? Achy legs. Let's have a stand-up meeting or a walking meeting, which is another great one.
Well, I'm going to start doing that now. And I did for yesterday, funny enough, I needed to, I was like, God, I was saying to Jess before I had this, I was like, my back's been killing me. I was like buying a new office chair, like just, a chair's not that comfortable, but like yesterday I was like, I need to speak to the team. So I thought, do you know what? I'm standing up. And I think I stood up for like 10 minutes. I probably distracted them all from doing their jobs, but it just had to be done.
The worst distraction in our business.
Yeah.
Because I like to talk to people and get everyone to interact, but I employ people that are absolute opposite to me.
Yeah.
Because I need people who are very linear and very regimented to make sure the stuff that needs to get done doesn't, because if there's a mistake in my job, people actually die, a building collapses, anything like that.
I'm only selling sweets.
Well, someone they could be saying quite bad there. But if I employ too many people like me, one, they get on my nerves, because I would get on my nerves. If I had another me in the business, I think I'd drive myself crazy. Yeah. So it's great to get other people. But the problem is with that, they get really frustrated with me because there's some stuff that I should be doing, which I don't.
Yeah.
And one of them is talking up. If I stand up and I think, oh, this room's been a bit quiet for a while, let's get everyone talking because I want everyone to know each other and come really close. I'll stand up and start talking and I can tell they're like, all right, Andrew, now sit down.
Yeah. No, I do get what you mean. It's like, and I suppose that's for me is, you know, we all start off the new year as like New Year's resolutions and all that. I don't believe in all that rubbish. But for me, it's, I'm trying to this year just work on, last year was like a really crazy year. And obviously what it was for everyone, COVID, all sorts of stuff like that. And I think I lost my gran as well, who was like a mum to me. Like we were so close. And I think it just made me put things into perspective.
Yeah.
And I think from a, you have your personal side, then you have your work side. I spend more time at work than I do anywhere else. Mm. And you go home when you've got your own business, you're no different. You end up, you're still working in your mind anyway. Mm. So to actually switch off is really difficult. So it's trying to get more structure in my day is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
And I would say, I'd probably say I've done a half decent job so far this year, you know, with trying to do that, with sitting down with each member of the team, you know, going over like, you know, objectives and stuff like that. Now we're getting in, trying to get into a habit of every week having a weekly meeting, which now I'm going to do standing up. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, yeah, it's important, I think.
Sounds like Kane's last year has been pretty crazy.
Yeah, Kane's in true startup mode at the moment. He's growing. And in fact, even since the podcast, the amount of announcements on LinkedIn that he's done, where he's just grown and got into normal stores, it's incredible what he's doing.
I think one thing that comes across is the importance of needing structure and a sensible routine in both your personal life and business. Kane really embodies how that has led him to be successful.
Yeah, and it's something that it takes a long time to find, and Kane was great at putting across how to do that.
Hi, everyone. I just have a quick announcement that I'm really excited to share. We're launching the Invisible Gift Community, a platform designed to provide support and resources for neurodivergent individuals. I've always been passionate about sharing conversations around being neurodivergent, raising awareness, and promoting understanding, but I want to do more. So now the Invisible Gift website will offer a range of tools and resources to help neurodivergent individuals navigate the challenges any one of us can face on a daily basis. This includes information about workplace accommodations, tips for managing sensory overload, advice on how to communicate effectively, information for how to get the most out of a neurodivergent child's education, as well as providing the building blocks for them to have a successful life, and much more. But to do this, we need your input. We are looking for therapists, influencers, business leaders, HR, and brand representatives to provide their input and support. If you're one of these people that wants to support neurodivergence, or if you just believe you can really help out, send my team an email on hello@theinvisiblegift.com and you can find more information on the Invisible Gift website. With your help, we can really turn neurodiversity into possibility. Okay, back to the show.
Coming up, Kane mentions how important the visual side of building a sweets and confectionery company is. And you talk about the time you sent an inappropriate person email to your whole company.
Yeah. I won't spoil it. Just take a listen to this.
Sounds fantastic. First up, though, you ask Kane what he excelled at school.
Again, we go back to, so we briefly pop back to school because this is quite interesting. Was there anything you flourished at school?
Oh, God, is it embarrassing to say this? So, religious education.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
That's definitely a different one than most people say.
I do not have a clue why or how. It was probably, so I didn't, because I didn't sit my GCSEs, I was able to do like a coursework element of it. So I actually passed on that particular, I didn't get a GCSE, whatever it was at the time, I can't remember exactly, but basically I'd done well at that. And I don't know why, because I'm not a religious person, my grannies and stuff was, but it was literally the only one, and I loved PE, but
yeah.
At that time, it was like, oh yeah, Kane's been really naughty in other classes, so he's not doing PE because that's like the thing he loves, which was really unfair at the time.
That's unfair.
And I remember when it was parents' evening, I remember my mum, literally, who would be the first to criticise me if I've done something wrong, but there was this one teacher and she was literally like, you've definitely got you've got a thing for Kane, not that sort of thing, but you've got a thing for him, like, whether it was failing or whatever it was, but it was just a constant nag. It was just a teacher. We've all got them teachers that are just...
Have you ever had one say to you in any sort of form that you probably won't amount to anything? Because that's something I get so much feedback on this podcast about people who end up doing really well being told. I got told by, I think it was my physics teacher. My English teacher was my physics teacher. Ironically, I'm a structural engineer. My physics teacher, own a massive engineering business. He told me that he said, I can't see you ever amounting to anything.
I wouldn't say I was told you're not going to amount to anything. There would always be like them little, like, Kane, if you don't knuckle down, you're going to do nothing, you know? And obviously, you know, back then you take that as quite a, you know, it's a serious thing. You're like, oh my God, like I'm leaving this, I'm going to be leaving and what am I going to be doing? And I, to be fair, first 6 months, I literally was like, what am I going to do with my life? Obviously, apart from I had a good, strong background who wouldn't allow me to just sit there and play computer games all day. It just wouldn't be happening.
Well, you can earn a lot of money from that now.
Sure, yeah, right? Yeah, true. Yeah. And all that. Yeah. But no, I wouldn't say... Yeah, no, I wouldn't say as such, but I do think there was a... Without, obviously, I wouldn't sit here and like slag off like my, you know, like the other classmates I had, but there were some ridiculously clever people in my, you know, passing every exam, like just perfect, always with their hand up first in the classroom. I was always the last or second last. Mm. But what was really funny is that the one thing they did not have was common sense.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because some of them now that I still actually know, you know, Facebook, Instagram and all that, I wouldn't say we're like mates, but you do keep nosy, you keep seeing what they're doing. And it's not about, I've never been one of those people that are like, oh yeah, I'm better than you, because I don't believe in stuff like that. If you're happy, for me, that is the biggest, biggest thing. You know, some people could be multimillionaires, like you said, but then going home being unhappy, it's like, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
And I think there was a part of me that was like, do you know what? You're working in a warehouse, but you were like, got A star this, A star that.
So before the podcast, we were talking about how you're doing as a business and the fact that you're going into festivals and stuff like that. You said that you don't really write down New Year's resolutions or goals. I'm very heavy into writing goals. I have everything broken down yearly, I think yearly, quarterly and monthly goals. I don't do weekly, although some people tell me I should. Do you write down a lot of your goals or do you just leave it in your head?
Well, funny enough, I did actually, which I'm just working on a presentation at the moment, which should be ready in a week or two. You know, no, it's not the beginning of January, but still it's the beginning of the year, where I've got a plan for this year, more along the lines of like milestones that I want to achieve by certain times of the year. Which also I can then share with the team. So then they're fully on board and they understand where we're looking to go in the next year.
Yeah.
Being January to December.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, yeah. So I try to, you know, write it down. I know January's been achieved because I knew what I needed to get done in January, which was launch a new product, get it all signed off, which is launching at the end of the month, beginning of Feb. So I'm really happy with that. Because that's kind of done and dusted. Now it's then moving on to next things, like silly things. Well, it's not silly, it's important, but launching our Amazon shop, you know, little things like that, that then have a massive impact on the business.
Yeah.
So.
That must be a minefield. I used to sell things on Amazon.
It has been a minefield. Christian, who works in the office, who's like, he heads up our sales area. He's the last couple of days, like we've all been taking mick out of him in the office because he's literally just been like, oh my God, this Amazon stuff, I just don't get it. It's like a whole,
And when you reach your goal, they then change it again.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, they always ask me, we used to sell like water bottles and stuff like that on Amazon that we created. Me and my wife used to create brands, build them and then sell them.
Yeah.
And we sell on, predominantly sold on Amazon. And my God, every single, like every other month, they would change everything. And we never sold in the UK. Everything we sold was in the US.
Oh, really?
Because the market was so big. And it was hard. And in the end, we just gave up on it. But we weren't really interested in the brand. It was just one of our side hustles.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine that. I can imagine why he's so stressed.
It's been an absolute pain in the ass because I will slap myself in the face and say that's been a fail on my behalf because I haven't really pushed it. And there's brands that are smaller than us that have literally been on Amazon Prime for like, you know, a couple of years. And I'm like, what are we doing? And I think it's because we've just sort of like taken our foot off the pedal a bit and focused on other stuff. That's like the events that we did last year and stuff. So it's kind of.
But the question is now, I know this is stepping away from dyslexia, but you've got me in such an interesting subject now. I've always had these conversations with people that after all the experience of selling online, I think building a brand is more important. And by doing festivals and more, that just creates mind space for your brand.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people go to online to buy it. If you try it the other way, and trust me, I've tried the other way.
Yeah.
And it fails because people don't know who you are. So in fact, they just flick through and whoever's got the nicest photos or the best description in what they're selling, do the best. Whereas by building a brand on the outside, you're going to win.
Oh, no, and we have. And do you know what? I'll be honest, building the, you know, the brand, as we call it, we've done something to ourselves, which is, you know, you go on our social media, you know, you look on it, you can see we've invested heavily into like photography, which is a big thing for us because people want to be able to see what they're buying and stuff like that. But that comes at a cost, you know, to do that. We also invested over $100,000 last year on building a, you know, basically an all functioning, all, you know, jazzed up sort of like shop, I suppose, that was taken from events to events to events. And then we were trying to get, you know, we had a swing that was made that looked like it was sweet. So like it was and it was amazing. We own all that stuff now. We've got it. And it's, you're right in what you're saying. It is, people buy into the brand. They buy into the story. They buy into all of that. And do you know what? It's helped us a lot when we then focus on the business side, which is more along the lines of going into like the Selfridges. Like last year, we basically got approached by Selfridges to open a, like a sort of feature, whole Ask Mummy and Daddy, fully branded feature wall within Selfridges. But we had to go to tender for that. And that was against 41 different confectionery companies and chocolate companies. And we had to do a serious amount of work for it. Like we had to send samples off of what the wood was going to be, you know, from the fixtures. Literally, it was a minefield. We were already in Selfridges, but this was like going to give us our signature sort of branding piece and for such a high-end store. And we actually won it. And now we're in there and we've got a 2-year contract for that, you know, set in stone, you know, and it's amazing. That was like last year, October, I think we done that, or November. And it was perfect timing because it's gifting season. You know, hopefully this year it will do even better because we've got the, you know, hopefully the die down of COVID or more tourists coming into the country. So, and that was amazing. And, you know, to tell people that all of our shelving is made from plastic bottles, which it is, is incredible. That did come at a huge cost, but it's something that we can kind of go tick the sustainability part, you know, which is important to us. But I think some people just got a bit carried away with it all, you know.
Yeah. So what is the plan for the business over the next few years? If you can divulge that, we might be the first finding out.
No. It's, look, I don't just hide away from it. I would like to sell the business in about 5 years' time and build it up where it's got pure value.
Out of interest, interrupting you there, do you find it easier building the business knowing that's your end goal? Because that's also my end goal. So we're mirroring each other today, scarily.
Do I find it easier, did you say?
Do you find it helps you with how you build the business and how you create it, knowing that your end goal is to sell it on? And I don't know about you, my reason for selling it on is because I believe I will get it to a point where I'm not the right person to run it anymore. And there's going to be people out there that can take the brand to a new level that I can't, because I said this in my last business. I think everyone has a point where they can take it to. And my belief is I'm great at this, but at one point a business will become corporate. Like you said about CAF's business.
Yeah.
And there's a point where you aren't the right person for that. Entrepreneurs are great at starting things and creating them and making amazing, creating great teams and culture. And then there's a person that can come in that knows how about putting systems in place, reducing costs in manufacturing and stuff. Do you think, is that the reason why?
Yeah, I think it's really opened my eyes up because it is things that go through in my head so on a daily basis. I think sometimes I do question myself, you know, I'm proud of what I've done, you know, because some people wouldn't be able to have done what I've done, you know, but I think I'm proud where I've got the business to.
Yeah.
I think sometimes I would say within the business, there's certain areas of possibly in the future, bringing in certain people to be able to, that have got one, a lot more experience than me, two, can actually help the team that we've already got to enhance their, you know, abilities and their experience. And actually someone who can kind of do stuff with their eyes closed to a certain extent, not with their eyes closed. They'd have to get a feel for the brand and know the brand and trust the brand, but actually, which they can do from me. But then after that, they kind of know the goal and what we need to achieve every year and they can just get on with that. So I do feel, do I find it, going back to, you know, the original question, do I find it easier? So knowing that that's what I want to do? No, because I think for me at the moment, I want to have fun with the business, you know, and grow the business and sort of fine tune a lot of things, which we're doing now. Mm. And that's been, you know, that's been great doing that. And it is really fun. Don't get me wrong. I sometimes want to pull my hair out, but it has been fun. It's been
that's
good
to me. Yeah. That's what I mean. I think so. The things I find amazing about business are the growing, the risk. They're saying for me, it's almost sexy about taking the risk. It's, and I think a lot of people would shy away from that. The people that would be great at running the company in year 5, year 8, year 10, whatever, are not the same people that can get it to there where it needs to be and make it the company that it is.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a weakness in either one of them. But again, it's like dyslexia. We have the gifts at the part of our life that get us there. And then there's other people that have the other strengths, normally non-neurodiverse people who can take it to the next level.
Well, it's you saying that, like, I remember when we got up, when I knew it was time to start Ask Mummy and Daddy, was like I said, I was doing it as a hobby and I was like, oh yeah, look, we're selling loads at like this market stall and that. Yeah. And it was just like, yeah, it's a thing. I know, I believe this is going to work. Like no one else probably did. Mm. And I remember I was like, right, I'm calling up Selfridges. This was years ago, obviously. Yeah. And I remember calling up, getting hold of the confectionery buyer who I still speak to now. She don't work there anymore. Emma Murphy, like she's amazing. And I literally was like, can we have a meeting? I've got this brand. At the time, obviously I didn't know her. Mm. She's like, yeah, come in. So obviously completely surreal. And it's very rare that happens, you know, calling up a big department store like that and getting a meeting. It's very rare. So I went in and I remember like we were showing them all the Valentine's Day stuff. And she was like, all right, yeah, that's fine, Kane. Leave these samples with me and then I'll feed back. Left it just like, you know what? Had my moment, went in there. Nothing might come of it. Remember 2 weeks later, I got an order in. And I was like, oh my God, it's amazing. But the order was like 10 grand. And I remember like one, I was like, shit, how am I going to afford this money? Like I've got to weigh all, you know, it happens. We worked it all out. But that was the moment where I was like, if they've won, you know, in the last 5 years, I think they've won number one department store in the world 4 times in a row. You know, I was like, if this is happening, I truly believe in this brand.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of bumps in the roads and there has been, but I just know that I'm onto something here, you know, and you know, the proof's in the pudding, it has worked. You know, there's some things that haven't worked, like, but I never like to, like talking when we spoke about the events, they cost a lot of money to do. I'm not, the whole project probably cost about 125 grand.
Yeah.
Some people could go, oh my God, Kane, do you know what you could do with that? Like you could have done this product, you could have done that product. And they are right. But to a certain extent, I don't really like it when we speak ill of them because some events were really, really good. We did have money come back in, which was great. We got the brand presence out there. We built that brand presence. Mm. But I would never go, oh God, I wish I didn't do that. I would never do it. And I refuse to do it. Like always.
Well, I think again, like growing up with things like dyslexia, you learn from failures and actually you become used to them. I had spent 2 years trying to work with this company and that's all I had. I was like, I've got to work with this company. They're going to be great for us. I worked with them and they were awful. We'd done 2 jobs with them and we lost thousands. I think it was 30 grand we lost with them. And everyone's like, how do you even swallow that? Because that was when we was only turning over 200 grand a year. Mm. 30 grand's a lot of money. And I was like, but I've learned so many lessons from working with them. I learned that just because they're massive and a big company doesn't mean that they're going to be the right company for us. And I learned that underselling yourself to try and win something just for the fact that you think there's going to be an outcome that you expect is just not worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of knowing your value is a key thing to learn. And I'm glad I learned it then rather than turning over millions and I have to learn on a project that's going to lose us millions.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of people, I think because of my dyslexia, I learned that at school.
Yeah.
And I learned it when I've come out and I use it both. It's failure's actually a great thing.
Yeah. No, it is. You are. And I think that's why I've always said to people, you know, like people make, like I make mistakes, you know, the team make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. It's not about, it's actually just talking through the mistake. How did that go wrong? Why did it go wrong? You know, you're probably going to make another mistake, but try and, you know, work on it. You know, at the end of the day, when you're the founder of a business and I'm responsible for the business's growth and what we do, it all comes back to me at the end of the day. But I want the team to, you know, some, I remember like when we were saying about learning early, I remember being at Cafe Kids and I was, oh God, I was making so many just mistakes because it was simply down to my own, I wasn't concentrating properly, you know, I was just taking my eye off the ball completely, you know, and I think, yeah, it's just learn, trial and error, you know, with all of it.
I made a terrible mistake. My first office job is, and the people I used to work with still love this story. I wanted to see whether you could send an email, and if you make a mistake, bring the email back. So Microsoft had this thing called callback, I think it is. You send an email, you do a callback, and I wanted to test it. Anyway, that was on my mind at the time. And I was, at the time, I was emailing my girlfriend, and we were talking about, it was nearly Halloween, we were talking about outfits, and we were talking about dressing up and stuff like that. Anyway, it probably got a bit too personal for emails. It wasn't anything bad, but we were talking like devil's costumes or something. It was a bit, anyway, I went to type in a name, and instead of typing her email address at the time, I typed all staff.
Oh my God.
And I sent it to 220 people in the company. And the reason why I'd done that is because I was at the same time trying to multitask. I was sending this test email to everyone, which I was just going to put like a, and try and call it back. Anyway, little did I know, the callback actually means it just sends another email saying, don't read that email. It does nothing. Mm. And all my phone just went crazy from everyone taking the piss out of me. And I was absolutely petrified of my managing director because he was one moody git. He's the sort of person you had to ask what sort of mood they're in before you went and spoke to him. Anyway, I run up to his office. I thought, I'm going to try and do something. And lucky enough, one of the directors was in there. She was like, don't worry. He asked me to check all his emails. She was like, I've deleted it, so don't worry about it. And then she took the piss out of me for about 10 minutes. But it's quite funny. You said about making mistakes. I've now learned it might be small, but check all your emails, who you're sending emails to before you bloody send them.
Yeah, I've probably sent emails before. Not like that, but I've probably sent emails before and I'm like, oh my God, wrong person. And you try and get that. Well, the callback thing, I'll be honest, I don't even know how it works. I think you can still do something. I don't know. But anyway, I'm like, he or she's probably already got it.
Yeah.
So I normally would just write an email and be like, sorry, wrong, you know, try and sort of cover my tracks. Well, not cover my tracks, wrong words, but I would just try and send that email quick and just be like, yeah, sorry, wrong person.
It's like when you send a WhatsApp and you can delete it. If anyone ever does that, I just send a laughing emoji and they normally
admit
what they've written.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, I didn't even see it, but now I know.
yeah, it's true.
We actually didn't get into, so what's the plan? I know you said you're just going to, you want to kind of sell, you're looking to sell in 5 years. So what's the plan for the business at the moment?
So the plan at the moment is literally we want to grow our wholesale accounts like to huge numbers, not just in the UK, but overseas. We are getting a lot of traction from overseas, which is great. Mm-hmm. So Australia, Macau in China. We've got inquiries with someone in Hong Kong at the moment. So there's lots going on behind the scenes. We already sell into like Poland, Norway and Germany. So it's just trying to grow that part of the business. So I'm going to Germany like this weekend to a confectionery convention. It'd be amazing. Yeah. I've been before, but no, it's incredible to see all that. But I mean, the plan for us is to sort of like stabilize a bit in like with what we do. Last year, like I said, we had a lot of fun, which I'm not saying we'd never do that fun again, but it's more about like all working on our strengths. How can we grow the business? It's for me, it's online. And wholesale has got to be our biggest, you know, area. Certain areas we haven't touched on yet are things like corporates, and we do get the corporate orders coming in, but we haven't even chased it.
No. Do you know what? I had a business idea recently. Now I'm going to share it with everyone. But then again, action's more important than ideas, right? Every year I buy my clients hampers. They are impossible to get good hampers. And I was like, and so I am a massive fan. In fact, I was actually thinking of investing in a hotel chocolate.
Right, yeah.
And they started doing hampers. And you say about, you know, it's a high premium brand. I could not believe the eye-watering prices of Hotel Chocolate.
It's incredible.
So I spoke to someone that works for them, and they was like, oh, yeah, we sell out every year. And I was like, that is mental. Like you saying about you kind of, there's always a price point that you worry about. For corporate companies, it's not even on their radar, the sort of prices they pay.
We had a corporate order last year, and it was like, do you know what? It was like a 20 grand order, and it was for, I don't know, 800 boxes or something. So our warehouse couldn't do them because it was just peak Christmas time. It was just crazy. So I was like, yeah, we're just doing them in the office. I'm not turning down that money. We're getting that money in, like whatever happens. And I remember we obviously did it. Oh my God, it was ridiculous. The office was a mess. Like it was just crazy. And I remember, I didn't even pack them to be fair, but I remember going, we're never doing this again. And it was really funny, before I even came to this podcast, like the same client emailed me and was like, yeah, okay, we need to talk about Easter. So I'm like thinking, we've got a bit of time now so we can plan it a bit better. I thought there's no way doing it. And it was just a nightmare. We literally had to get all the addresses onto us, but we had to manually put in like 800 addresses or 1,000, whatever it was. So yeah.
What would you say is, for you, your invisible gift in your working world or life generally?
What I would say about myself, and I will just blow my own trumpet, is
definitely do
how I'm talking to yourself, how I'm talking to my staff, how I'll talk if I was talking to someone who is way, way, you know, far in their career. I would not change myself at all. I would always be the same. Like some people I've worked with, and they like have a slightly different tone when they're talking to someone. I think that's my gift of, which is what I learned in a very early stage when I worked with Kath Kidston, which was, she's a multimillionaire, but she admired how I used to just be like straight to the point and straight up.
Yeah.
But like I said, always respectful, but always in a way of, but this is me. I'm not going to pretend I'm something I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not afraid to admit the struggles or afraid to admit the things that I like to talk about the things that I've done well, because I think everyone should always, you know, show off what they've done. Mm. Not in an arrogant way, but like, you know, you should be proud of yourself.
Yeah. I think that's great. And I think what you kind of honed in is more to do around people skills.
Mm.
Do you think then people skills have come from having to supplement maybe things you weren't good at school into, I always say this, I hate saying it, it sounds like I'm saying something wrong, but because I couldn't do a lot of things at school, I become, and I use the word manipulative, it's not the right word, but I became good, and Richard Branson always talks about this, in convincing people to help me. And that made me really good at people skills. And that in turn has been even this podcast, most people say I'm make them very relaxed very quickly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, and I think that is kind of like what you're saying, the people skills you gather. Do you think that's something to do with the dyslexia?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I would say that I would hope from their perception that Kane makes me feel really comfortable. Mm. It's like certain things I'm not very, like, I will admit, put an Excel sheet in front of me, I can read it, I can see the bottom numbers, but I am not that great at doing it. So we've got a admin girl in the office, Yasmin, who is like incredible at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Monday, she was literally, might as well sat with me at the desk, because we were going through so much budget work, but she was brilliant, like just putting it all together, and that's all I need to see. Mm. But by me, I'm kind of giving her confidence to speak to me and, you know, chat to me, you know, and I'm very, even from outside work, you know, we would always make sure, you know, right, guys, let's go for a drink. It's Friday. We've worked hard this week. Let's all go for a drink. And it's making them all feel comfortable. Mm. Because I've experienced that myself. I've been in that position where you start a new job or you might not feel comfortable and you're like, right, let's just soften it and let's go for a drink, you know, or go for lunch or whatever it is. And it makes them people feel comfortable. So I would hope that, you know, that's one of my big pros, I would say, is, you know, anyone who joins, I would always be like, relax, you know, just take it. Take it easy. It's not, geez, we're not saving lives here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
because we're very similar, we probably take for granted the fact that not many, and even if you, with your kind of working with CAF, we probably take for granted that most bosses aren't like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not. I've worked with some absolute horrendous bosses And it's not really their fault. It's just that they don't know how bad they are.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, it's always great to try and put as much back in and support people as you want. And like I said, I think what you're going to create is a lot of people that work for you that one day maybe work for other companies or work on their own, that they will also treat their staff the same. So if more people were like us, there'd actually be a better working environment, aren't there?
Yeah. No, you've nailed it on the head. Totally agree. I do. Totally agree with you.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been amazing.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. No, I really, really enjoyed it. And actually chatting to someone who has got dyslexia to bounce off, you know, it's been really, really insightful. It's been great.
Thank you.
Before we go any further, Andrew, that story about the inappropriate personal email, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I say it is probably brilliant for people listening, but it's certainly not brilliant for me.
Well, I, for one, enjoyed it. And I also really enjoyed Kane's awareness of his own invisible gift, which is the fact that he speaks and treats everyone the same. He never pretends to be something he isn't.
Yeah, he is authentic down to the last bit, which is great for someone like, great for entrepreneurs and getting your message out there as a founder. I think it's really important.
I think that is definitely true. And you can see, and I guess because we're both business owners, I don't like the word entrepreneur, but you know what I mean. You kind of see it in other people, but his openness and his drive to build a business and constantly improve himself is so clear to see and evident in the success that he's now getting.
Yeah, it's actually a beautiful journey to watch. And actually what's really great is I've managed to meet Kane at the beginning of his journey and already I can see such great things happening.
Most importantly, Andrew, have you got a favourite sweet?
Yes, I've always got a favourite sweet, which are the marshmallows.
Oh, I noticed I didn't get any marshmallows.
No, I didn't give you marshmallows for that
you
reason.
Didn't.
I actually told you could take anything but the marshmallows.
You did. Kane, thank you so much for coming on the show. And more importantly, thank you for the sweets. If you'd like to order your own treats and gifts, then absolutely go check out their website. It's askmummyanddaddy.com. I will make sure it gets linked in the show notes for this week's episode, as always. Next week, on the final episode of season 3, which is also episode number 11.
Yeah, we've gone odd this season.
Gone crazy. We will be joined by Nathan Whitbread, aka the Neurodivergent Coach. We've met the Neurodivergent Investor.
Yeah.
Now the Neurodivergent Coach. The main conversation, the main thing we're focusing on is how neurodiversity will finally become sexy.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm excited to find out that myself.
Me too. We are headed towards the end of the season. And we're starting to think about what we do next, what and how this conversation evolves. We love listener feedback. You do especially.
Mm.
So where can they write to you? How can they get hold of you?
So for anyone who wants to get hold of me, you can either contact me on any of the social channels, but mainly Andrew Kitley. You just search me on any of the social media channels, you'll find me. Or you can alternatively send me an email at andrew@theinvisiblegift.com. where I take all your questions, or just send us a voice note. Whatever you're comfortable with, it's all about you.
It would mean the world to us if you could rate or review the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps with other people knowing this is a great show of value, and that helps to grow our community, which means we can do more cool stuff for all of you guys. As we mentioned, we've got some live events and potentially some other opportunities to interact with the Invisible Gift brand as things are growing. Well, our community is now really getting up and running, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been amazing, just the feedback and the numbers growing, which is great, because the more people we reach, the more people we can celebrate the power of neurodiversity.
And you've been doing some great stuff. You're out in schools with Paloma, from a guest from season 1.
Yes, we're going out to schools now so we can spread the gift from two prongs. We're going out to the workforce and we're going out to the schools to try and promote neurodiversity in all its finery.
So yeah, lots going on. I think that's probably about it for this week, don't you?
Yeah, well, I'm all excited about next week now.
I will see you then.
See you later. Just a couple of quick notes before we go. They're important ones. You've been listening to the Invisible Gift podcast, presented by me, Andrew Kitley, and produced by One Fine Play. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Special thanks to Christina, Izzy and the Cube Studios. Thank you for listening to the Invisible Gift podcast.